Fantastic. Well, I just want to reiterate our series to start with. So there's three different... Can we go to the next slide? Do we have the three ones on? Yeah, there we go. We're going to look at three tables. We heard from Pastor Olivia around the church table. I'm doing the third one, so we're just mixing it up for no particular reason, which is the third space that isn't home and it isn't the church. And then Pastor Caleb is going to bring it all to a head and talk around the table at home, family-centered around that table. So I'm not an expert at all, but I'd love to share some learnings around that third table, that third space, about personally a story, but also around the Alpha table, because while the tables are diverse and quite different, it's not just the table or the setting, it's the audience and the conversations. So I want you to get that in your head. It's not the table or the setting, it's the audience and the conversations. The conversations that I'll be having are very different to what Pastor Olivia opened up last week around commitment, and I'm not going to have those conversations around that third table. And I'm assuming it's going to be quite a different conversation at home, around the home table. So that's really important to start with, particularly because when we go into Alpha, it's at the church, but it's the audience and the conversations that make it distinctive to the first table being the church. I hope that's clear enough. I want to start with a question. So I want you to have your thinking caps on right at the beginning. I want you to think, if you could sum up Jesus... So all of us are at different faith journeys, and some are just starting it, some are still looking, some are quite seasoned and advanced, been doing this following Jesus thing for a long time. But if each one of you could summarize Jesus in one word, what would that be? I want you to think for a moment. Give you just a moment to really... think, if you could summarize Jesus, it's no small feat, is it? Just that in itself. How do you, I want you to shut your eyes even. Don't look at me. I want you to shut your eyes. And I want you to honestly, shut your eyes. There you go. If I see any eyes, I'll tell you. No. I want you to think for a moment, because there's many words, when I started thinking about this, many words, you know, just kept coming to my mind over and over and over and over again. But if you could summarize in one word, what would that one word be? I want you to write it down, put it in your phone, taking notes, just write it down, memorize it. We're going to return to it later, all right? I just want you to hold it in your heart for now. You could summarize. It's not easy, is it? I didn't find it easy. I want you to ponder as I work through the rest of the sermon. But I want to start with a story, a biblical story, found in Luke 24. A bit unusual around this third table, but hopefully it'll make a little bit of sense. On that same day, two disciples were traveling to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking to each other about everything that had happened. While they were discussing these things, Jesus himself arrived and joined them on their journey. They were prevented from recognizing him. He said to them, "What are you talking about as you walk along?" They stopped, their faces downcast. The one named Cleopas replied, "Are you the only one, the only visitor in all of Jerusalem that is unaware of the things that have taken place over the last few days?" And Jesus said to them, "What things?" I really like Jesus. He doesn't assume, he asks. I like that about him. And they said to him, the things about Jesus of Nazareth, because of his powerful deeds and his words, he was recognized by God and all the people as a prophet. But our chief priests and the leaders handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. We had hoped that he was the one who would redeem Israel. All these things happened 3 days ago. But there's more. Some women from our group have left us stunned. They went to the tomb early this morning and they did not find his body. They came to us saying that they had even seen a vision of angels and told them he was alive. So they told him he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found things just as the women had said. They too did not see him. Then Jesus said to them, "Oh, you foolish people, your dull minds keep you from believing all that the prophets talked about. Wasn't it necessary for Christ to suffer these things and then enter into his glory?" And then he interpreted for them the things written about him in all of the scriptures, starting with Moses and going all the way through the prophets. When they came to Emmaus, he acted, I like Jesus again, I like the way he acts. He acted as if he was going on ahead, but they urged him, saying, "Stay with us. It's nearly evening and the night is almost over." So he went to stay in with them. And after he took his seat at the table, in other words, he reclined, he relaxed with them, shared a meal. He took the bread, blessed it, broke it, and he gave it to them. And their eyes were opened and they recognized him. But he disappeared from their sight. Then they said to each other, "Weren't our hearts on fire when he spoke to us along the road? And when he explained the scriptures to us?" I want to just bring four key elements in this story before you. The first thing is Jesus joined them on the journey, but they didn't know who he was. That's really important. He was on a dusty road. It wasn't in a church. It wasn't in a temple. He joined them on their journey. It's really important, particularly around this third table. We're not inviting them to church. You are meeting them where they're at. It's really important. They didn't recognize him, and some of your people at that table may not recognize Jesus at all. They might not know him, heard about him. They're blind. They cannot see. They don't know Jesus. Same with these boys. They knew stories. They'd heard a lot of things. They were very disillusioned. They were very downcast. They were very sad. Their hopes of the prophet redeeming Israel would happen. It didn't happen. They're confused. They're disorientated. They're disillusioned. They know stories of Jesus, but that's about it. All of their hopes had been dashed. Not in a good place. That's the first thing. Jesus joined them on their journey. This table is about going to them. It's not about them, you bringing them in here. The second point I want to bring to light is Jesus asked them what they were talking about. I don't know about you, but sometimes when I'm in a group of people or a few, I dominate the conversation. You know, I bring my thoughts and my agendas to light. I think I've got something to say. But here Jesus is not like that. He asked them what they were thinking about, what they were talking about. He could see that they were clearly disorientated and disillusioned. And he enters into their pain. He enters into their grief. He enters into their story, their concerns, their cares, their frustrations. He doesn't dominate straight away. He actually goes in and he hears what they were talking about. Really important to listen. not to assume, not to think that we know what they need. You've got to listen so we can work out where the starting point of any conversation is. And I think Jesus does that masterfully. He goes in and he lets them talk and he lets them try and work out and shares everything. And, you know, I'm sure he had probably a smile on his face as he listened to all of their frustration and all of their, you know, misinformation or all of their, you know, their hopes and dreams that they thought would happen is now not happening. Number three, he calls them, "You foolish people, are you so dull?" I don't recommend saying that, by the way. Clause, all right? Why does he say that? Why does he let them share, you know, so vulnerably? I mean, they're in trouble. They're not getting what's going on. And then he calls them dull of mind and foolish. Now, I don't recommend you say that to your friends. But what I am thinking that this is talking about is that at some point, the gospel needs to be shared. At some point, Jesus enters into and brings to light the gospel story about his suffering, about why he had to suffer, why he went on to his glory, why things had happened the way that happened. You see, the gospel is offensive. I think that's why he called them, you know, or that's why I'm taking it anyway, that he would call them dull, stupid, foolish, all these things that are quite offensive. If anyone said that to me, I'd want to punch them, not love them. But I'm human and I'm not very good at a lot of things. But if someone called me dull and stupid and foolish, I would probably be offended. My guard would be up. My walls would be guarded. But this is the gospel, the good news of Jesus. It is offensive. And I'm going to share a little bit about that in a moment. But it's the third point. Actually, I'll share it now. Can I get that little point up? Yeah. The offense of the gospel. We'll probably take a photo of this, but here he is, he's entering in. At some point, the gospel needs to be shared. In the stories, as you hear their story and what's going on, at some point, Jesus is going to ask you to share the gospel story. The concept of the offense of the gospel refers to the inherent challenge and stumbling block that the message of Jesus Christ presents to human pride, self-righteousness, and worldly wisdom. The gospel, by its very nature, confronts and contradicts the values and beliefs of the world, leading to opposition and rejection by those who do not accept its truth. The offense of the gospel is an endearing reality that reflects the transformative and countercultural nature of the message of Jesus Christ. It challenges individuals to confront their sin, embrace the grace of God, and live in accordance with His truth, often in the face of opposition and misunderstanding. I think that is a great phrase or paraphrase of what we see in that story. He risked offending them, but the truth prevailed. The gospel literally means the good news of Jesus, or an announcement. That's what the gospel is. It's an announcement of what God has done, past, what He's doing, present, and will do, future, and especially eternity, through Jesus Christ to rescue sinful humanity. It's the greatest news on the planet. Pastor Olivia explained that well last week regarding communion, Jesus' life, why he came, and how he lived perfect, without sin, without fault. He was that lamb, if you remember last week. Also, his death, the great exchange, his life for mine. It wasn't a pardon, it was more than that. It was an exchange. It cost him his life in order that I would live. And the resurrection, which is my new life in Christ. That is the gospel. That is the great news. That Jesus entered into our mess, into our world, and redeemed it, restored it, and is still doing that today. The past, the present, and the future. The fourth point from that story, is after the table was prepared, he took his seat. He reclined. He relaxed. He was unhurried. They just walked for some distance. And at this table, this third place, this third space, after he'd spoken with them, as he joined them on their journey, as he opened up the gospel, he then sat down at this table and something miraculous happened. All the rest of it was a build-up, if you like, to this moment, the table. And I love the fact that a lot of the versions said when he took his seat, meaning he relaxed, he reclined, unhurried. And when he did that, the miraculous happened just after, in that moment. He broke bread and their eyes were open. Their eyes were blind so their hearts could see the truth. Their hearts were burning as he spoke with them on the road, but they could still not see him. But at the table, they saw him, not as a prophet, but as the Messiah. Something happens at the table when we're relaxed, when we're unguarded, when we're sharing food and stories. But it was on the road that their hearts were burning, but their eyes were still blind. This is some of the things that I've learned, you know, to delve into the hearts of the conversations, the hearts of people, the concerns, what they're thinking about, what's important to them, and get into that realm of the heart. But the heart is significantly important. Before they could see him, their hearts were burning. I hope you understand that. The heart is critically important. Pastor Olivia opened up Luke 22 for us last week, and one of the key scriptures was in verse 9, where it says, Jesus sent Peter and John ahead and said, go and prepare the Passover meal so we can eat it together. That word prepare, in that context, as you look into the deeper meaning, as I do when I look at particular words and what they mean, my Bible shows me what the Hebrew and Greek means. But it means to prepare the meal or the table is to make ready. Yes, there's preparation. Yes, there's food. Yes, there's a place and seating and tables, and you have to make ready. But really what that word prepare means is to take time to prepare the hearts and minds of men and women to give the Messiah, Jesus, the proper reception and secure his blessing. Isn't that amazing, that word prepare? So when Jesus said, go and prepare, he was saying, I'm going to prepare your heart and mind also to receive me so I can secure my blessing for you. So there's something about this table or this preparation that is really, really important. Now, Jesus fully intended to help them see, but notice the priority of Jesus' revelation. Before he opened their physical eyes, he purposed and prepared to open their heart eyes first. God prepared the heart before they saw him as the Messiah. And this happened at this third table. He was very, very relaxed. In 1 Peter 4, verse 9, it says, practice hospitality. We've got to keep practicing. We've got to keep doing it. We've got to keep at it. It's not a once and forget. You've got to keep going. I like that word practice. Practice hospitality. To one another, those in the household of faith, which is our potluck. We're practicing third week in a row. Who's been enjoying the potlucks, by the way? Has it been good? Fantastic. I see a lot of hands there. And it's all different each time. It's really good. Callum's not too sure. Oh, Victor's not too sure. Okay, well, I'll move on. I won't even ask if you brought anything, but I'm going to keep going, all right? But it goes on to say, be hospitable, practice hospitality, and be hospitable to the lover of strangers, those we don't know, with brotherly affection to the unknown guests, to foreigners, those who don't know who we are or who Jesus is, the outsiders if you want. But it says, be hospitable to these people, to the poor, those who don't have much. Open up your wallets, open up your fridges, open up the table. And to all those who come your way, who are Christ's body. And in each instance, do it ungrudgingly, affectionately and graciously, without complaining, but as, number one, representing Jesus Christ. So how do I practice hospitality in this third space? About a year ago, I moved to Officer from Botanic Ridge and set up my house there, and I asked God for a community. It's a new place. I'd known Botanic Ridge, and if you know me, I knew all my neighbours. I loved all my neighbours. I quite often would feed my neighbours and were very happy. My prayer walks, I knew a lot of the Botanic Ridge estate where I walked my dog each morning and created conversations with lots of people and had deep and meaningful conversations. But here I am, a year ago, moved from my little comfort place I'd loved, place I'd built, to a brand new place in Officer. So I asked God for a community to be involved in there. Well, it wasn't too long before God opened up an invitation to me to go to Pilates. I'd never done Pilates in my life before. I mean, my morning workouts, you know, are heavy and good. And I go to Pilates and they're little weights and stretchy bands and, you know, mats and all that kind of stuff. But I knew that was an invitation from God, not fully understanding what was about to happen. But I took up the invitation and I went there and I had my first trial, and then I said, yep, let's keep doing this, because I just knew that God was in this somehow. I didn't know how, I didn't know why, it didn't make sense to me. I'm certainly not, you know, tested with the weights or anything like that was going on, but there was something more on offer and I was at least smart enough to know that. So I said yes, and I paid my 10 weeks and in advance and locked in to this. And it wasn't much long after that I'd realized that after Pilates, it was just one lady and a group of guys, about 8 of us, and I was probably the youngest by far, and that was fine. And all older than me and little weights and doing little stretchy bands and whatever. But what I realized is after the Pilates had finished, they all went to a Thai restaurant and they ate. But it was on a Wednesday, and I was in a bit of a dilemma, because my Wednesdays were like this. I would meet with Caleb and Sarah, and we would have our, you know, midweek check-in, and it would finish around 4:30. So then I would fly from here back up to Officer, get my stuff ready for Pilates, and then I would go to Pilates, and then I would have to go straight from there and fly all the way back down here to go to my life group. And I would miss the meal. It was frustrating because I knew God was calling me there, but I was certainly dedicated and loyal and committed. Pastor Olivia, I was committed to my life group, so I would turn up. But the busyness of that was exhausting, and I wanted to get to this dinner. So when we had our life group campaign, as much as I didn't want to leave my life group because I was very comfortable there, I'd been at that life group for 5 years. I'd known the boys. I was very comfortable. I loved them. I was, you know, very happy there. But I felt God was saying, it's time to multiply. It's time to let go. So I said to my boys, I think I've got to go. And I started this open life group, which has been amazing in itself. And so I was... I was clever enough to go, okay, if I'm starting a new life group, I'm going to change days. I'm not going to do Wednesday, I'm going to do Tuesday, which is very unusual because I've been doing Wednesdays forever with my life group. But that what they did do was open up my opportunity to go to dinner with the boys after Pilates. So that's what I did. I started my life group on the Tuesday, and I was able to go to the dinners. And again, I just joined them. I rearranged my schedule, my everything, just so I could get to dinner with them. And I practiced what I'm asking you to do, or opening up the scriptures. I didn't talk much. I'm a talker. I listened to their concerns, what's on their heart, what's on their mind, what they're going through, their older generation. Health is probably their number one. They're getting older. And I see a godly conversation brewing around like what happens next. But for the moment, we're talking about skin cancers, which I did go and get checked, and I have a little thing I have to get cut out. So I listened to them. Went to a skin cancer, talking about cancer today, a skin cancer checkup. And I was never going to think about it. I'm like, it was the furthest thing from my mind. But it's really important to them. So I said, where do you go? So I went to where they told me to go and got checked out. And I have a little thing that I have to get cut out. And so that's good for me, right? But lo and behold, as I began to communicate with them and talk with them, and slowly but surely this gospel message is starting to come through, little by little. And not only is it getting through, but I'm at the point where they have invited me to their table. So they've invited me, Pete, can I hire you? I said, well, what do you mean hire me? I said, well, I know you're a good cook and you cook big stunks, you know, chunks of meat. We want to hire you and have you at our table at the Christmas table with a group of our families and friends. So out of that, me joining them at their table, now I've been invited to another table, a bigger table around the Christmas time. One thing I learned, and I learned this unfortunately in a bad way, and here's, I hope, some godly advice, that if they begin to open their hearts like those boys on the road, don't go in and rearrange their furniture. I did that with my son, and it was a long time before he opened up his heart to me again. I'll say it again, if they open their heart to you, do not rearrange their furniture. Just go in and relax. Recline like Jesus did. Be unhurried. Might look out of place. There might be things in there that are not quite right. Don't say anything. Just wait for the right time until they ask you the questions. It's really, really important. That's my learning, and I've learned to do that. Just be patient. So now here we are, a little bit long, not too long later. They've invited me to their big Christmas cook-up, and yes, I'm cooking, but it's not the food. They want me out there to share and to talk and to be a part of what they're doing, which is amazing. At some point, there will be a deeper conversation. That's already beginning to happen one by one, not all of them, but one by one are beginning to ask me about my faith, about my journey. And I'm going to get back to that for you in a minute. I want to talk about how do we practice hospitality. That's how I practice hospitality. That's my story around my journey, and it's yet to be finished. How do we practice hospitality? Well, the Alpha table. And again, I know it's at church, but if you remember, it's the audience and the conversations that are the important part, not the seating, not where we actually are. So the audience for Alpha are those that are seeking, starting. It's that realm. We had a beautiful couple last Tuesday who came for the first time through invitation. And I asked them, where is their landscape in terms of Christianity? They said, I have nothing. They have no idea about the Christian landscape or the Christian thing. So we have those that are starting, seeking, and those have no idea. The Alpha Course is an evangelistic program designed to introduce the basics of Christian faith through a series of talks and discussions. It typically runs over 10 weeks or thereabouts and includes a table, which is a shared meal. The first time we did that, it was really awkward. We put the meal on and everyone's sitting down and it's kind of weird and it's kind of like a little bit forced, or that's how it felt. But soon enough, week two, week three goes along and everyone's really relaxed. The food's fantastic and everyone begins to really look forward to the meal. And we're not rushed at it. We're not hurried. We take about 45 minutes to 50 minutes just to short talk and share. And all of the unwinding happens at that point. All the day and what's happened in the day all begins to kind of like, you know, unhinge. And all of a sudden we just begin to have proper and nice, you know, conversations around things that are important to us. So the table, again, is really, really important. And after the table, as people are relaxed and they've reclined and they've unloaded and they've eaten, and you can just see all of the worries of the day just begin to melt down, and there's just this moment at the table. Then we move into a topic on Christian concept, a Christian concept, and a talk, which is an open discussion among the people. The course is run in a variety of locations, including churches, homes, universities, cafes, prisons, and is open to anyone interested in exploring faith. And the audience and the conversations are different from the church table and the one that is at home. Prior to running Alpha, I went to an Alpha training just to work out, is it right? Is the timing right? Should I put all my energy and effort into getting this up? The meals are not big. And there's like 40 of us. It's not like there's three. There's about 40 of us that meet on a Tuesday night. So logistically, isn't that amazing? That's amazing. Like, you know, 20 odd deaf and hard of hearing and about 20 of those that are seeking and looking at what Christianity is all about and a variety in between, if I'm honest with you. But there's a lot of effort that's got to go into it. And prior to actually pulling the trigger on it, I was, you know, asking God, is it the right timing? Is this, you know, the right thing or not? And that scripture in Luke 24 was really clear. I went to the training, the Alpha training night day, and God said, if you prepare the table, I will take my seat. So something about preparing and you doing the work and you doing something, but it's got nothing to do with me really. It's going to, who is going to take his seat at the table? That's the key. The presence of God is at the table and miraculous things begin to open up. Remember, they begin to see things. And what I love about Alpha explores the big questions of the heart before the eyes are really opened. It really goes in with what do we believe. And we discuss about that. Nothing's off the table. You can say whatever you like. You can, you know, give your opinions about whatever whatever you want. No one's there to teach anyone anything. It's just an open and honest conversation. I'm not the teacher there. I'm just the host. I just invite you in. And we talk and we discuss about the big things that are going on. Is there more to life than this? Who is Jesus? Did he really have to die? All these questions begin to open up and talk. But the table is really, really important. I want to keep moving on with the last part of the scripture before we head towards communion again today. If we can go to the end of Luke 24. They got up and they returned to Jerusalem. Now remember, they just left Jerusalem and they walked. There was no Uber. There was no horse. They walked along a dusty road that finally arrived at evening time. So it was really, really late in the day. And after this encounter with Jesus on the road where their hearts were burning, and then the table and the miraculous that had happened there, and all of a sudden they saw the Messiah for the first time, not the prophet, not the one that they were hoping would redeem. He was far bigger than that. He was the Messiah of the world. Once they got there, it's interesting, when their eyes were opened, they got up straight away and returned back to Jerusalem, the place they'd just come from. why I think that's amazing is they took action. They didn't just stay there for the night. I would have been like, I'm tucking in. I've had a belly full of food. But there was something motivated on the inside, and their hearts were burning. They saw something different, and immediately they did something. They took action, and they returned to Jerusalem, and they found the other 11. They found the other disillusioned. I think this is a real key. Those that were still waiting and still not understanding and still frustrated, you know, where's the body, what's going on? The amount of questions. This is only 3 days after Jesus had died. In fact, that morning, if you remember, the girls went to the tomb and there was nobody there. They go straight up. They got up and went straight back to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together, and they started saying what had happened. They started saying, you know, what had gone on. The Lord really has risen. He appeared to Simon. And then the two disciples described what happened to them along the road and how Jesus had made known to them as he broke the bread. There's something about this table, this third space, that the miraculous will happen. I want to go back to that word that you've been brewing on and thinking about. There's a guy called Dallas Willard. And he is a great philosopher. He died in about 2013. He's a philosopher, a theologian, an author of many books. In fact, a guy called John Mark Comer, who wrote Practicing the Way, and we did that course, I think it was early this year. Did we do it? So John Mark Comer was heavily influenced by Dallas Willard. And someone asked Dallas Willard, if you could sum up Jesus in one word. Now, this was a deep theologian, a philosopher, an author, with all of your learning, all of your thoughts, all that you know about Jesus, if you could sum him up in one word, what would that be? And that word was relaxed, unusual, unhurried. Even at the Last Supper, knowing what he was about to enter into, the pain, the rejection, the isolation, the torment, the ridicule. He knew all that was about to happen. And yet at this Last Supper, on the road with these boys, he was just relaxed, unhurried, unguarded. And when you carry that presence, the people around you begin to also relax and be unguarded. What word would summarize Jesus to you? I want you to think back to that word now. The one word that you have summarized Jesus at. It doesn't have to be deep and meaningful. It just has to be your summary of how you know this person, Jesus Christ. And guess what? That is what you take to the table. The revelation of who he is to you is all God needs you to do, is take that revelation of who he is to you to the table. You don't need... I've lost my notes. Oh, there we are. You don't need a biblical thesaurus or a degree in Hebrew or Greek. You just need a revelation of who he is. Bring that revelation or your heart's eyes about him to the table and let him enter their world, their heart, their mind through you. When you share, just share that word. For me, it's kindness. If I could sum Jesus up in one word, he's so kind. I can't think of a better word. It brings me to tears. I don't deserve him. He's just so kind to me all the time. When other people are kind to me, I get very moved because I know it's Jesus in them being so kind to me. It just moves me because it's when I think of kindness, I think of him. And that's all I do to take to the table is bring the kindness of God to other people. Because it's who I think of when I think of him. It's not difficult. You don't need to have all the answers. I'm trying to give you a way in, not a way out. You all have one word, I hope. Just deepen that. Grow that. Explore that. Take that. Action that at the table. I'm telling you, it'll have profound effects. There'll be miracles. I feel this in my heart. There'll be miracles. And others that God leads you to will see that revelation of Christ in you. Isn't that so simple? I'm not a complicated man. I'm not at all. All I know is just take the kindness of God to others. I want you to think back when we did our evangelistic little series around the Reach Plan and those that you have been praying for, that what may be on the board in there, or maybe you wrote down, or those that you're praying for. I want you to think for a moment. Shut your eyes. I want you to think of those people. Maybe one person. Could you invite them to the table this week? Can you have a coffee with them? Have a meal with them? Prepare. Remember, when you prepare, which does take time, does take effort, you have to align yourself and join them. They're not going to join you. You join them. You enter into their conversation. Listen to what is urgent on their hearts and minds. And then if the opportunity comes up for you to share your one word, or even demonstrate it, or even action it, I believe there's going to be miracles. Eyes are going to open. They're going to not just hear, they're going to see. See Jesus in you. They're going to see Jesus in you. They're not looking for you. They're not looking for me. They're not. They're not looking for you. They're looking for Jesus in you. So you got to take him. Don't make it complicated. Just think of that word. If you and I prepare the table, he will take his seat. We're going to sing this song, and I'm going to invite you to come to the table, take the communion, because remember, when he broke bread, something happened. And I believe, and I'm going to pray over, when you come and grab communion, that this word that you've got in your heart would grow. This revelation of Jesus. Because remember, he said, when you take this communion, remember me. All I'm saying is, remember that word. Who is Jesus to you? Doesn't have to be complicated. Doesn't have to be deep. But it has to be meaningful. It has to be your word. No one else's word. No one knows it except for you and God. So I'm going to invite you right now to come to the table, grab your communion. And where it says, remember me, I'm going to pray afterwards that word that you've remembered would grow deeper. And not only that, that you would invite someone else into that word. Show them, deliver them, action it, whatever. So we're just going to see.